Radio Prague News.
The military has decided to reinforce the protection of Czech soldiers in Afghanistan. The Council of Judges of the Supreme Court has approved the Justice Ministry's request that Jaroslav Bureš become a judge of the Supreme Court, and the Czech Medical Chamber has called on Health Minister David Rath to discuss easing the directive on remunerating medical care. Defense Minister Karel Kühnel said on Thursday that the military had decided to reinforce the protection of Czech soldiers in Afghanistan. The military is reacting to the outburst of violence in Muslim countries caused by the printing of cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad that are considered disrespectful by Muslims. The Council of Judges of the Supreme Court has approved the Justice Ministry's request that Jaroslav Bureš become a judge of the Supreme Court. Mr. Bureš is scheduled to be appointed judge by President Václav Klaus on Tuesday and so fulfill all legal conditions to be appointed chairman of the Supreme Court. The post has been vacant since Iva Brožová was dismissed by President Klaus last week. Mr. Bureš has been cited as a successor to Ms. Brožová, but neither the President nor the Justice Ministry have confirmed it. Mr. Klaus said at the beginning of the week that the new Supreme Court chairman would arise from the 30 judges whom he would appoint on February the 14th. Meanwhile, the Czech Republic's Constitutional Court has decided that Iva Brožová will remain acting chairwoman of the Supreme Court until the Constitutional Court rules on her complaint against her dismissal. The Czech Medical Chamber has called on Health Minister David Rath to discuss easing the directive on remunerating medical care. The decree and Mr. Rath's policies are opposed by a number of doctors' associations, which plan to hold a large protest rally in the centre of Prague later this month. Under the minister's directive, doctors and healthcare facilities will receive 3% more money for providing care than they received in the first half of 2005. However, the decree also stipulates strict limits on the use of medicines and certain treatments. If doctors and facilities exceed the limit, they will not be remunerated by health insurance companies and will face penalties. The tent city, which was set up in Prague in January to provide overnight shelter for homeless people, will be removed next Wednesday, Prague Mayor Pavel Bem told reporters on Thursday. The 7 army tents, equipped with wood-burning ovens and toilets, have been providing beds and food for around 100 homeless people every night. According to estimates, there are some 4,600 homeless people in the Czech capital, while shelters only provide 900 beds. And finally, a glance at the weather. It should be partly cloudy with occasional snow in the next couple of days. Daytime temperatures are expected to range from minus 2 to plus 1 degrees Celsius. I'm Pavla Horáková, that's the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Peter Smith. Coming up in today's programme is an innovative scheme that allows the employed to be rewarded for handing over some of their work to the unemployed, a good idea. Also, a treasure trove of Teutonic weaponry is unearthed in the Krušné Hore region, and the tiny statue of the baby Jesus. Yes, Ian Willoughby examines the phenomenon that is the child of Prague. Don't go away. We start in the small North Bohemian town of Bečov.
Špatný, moc špatný.
Hrozný. Vy všechno dojíždí, tady není kde se zaměstnat.
Když někdo hledá práci, tak ji hledá těžko, hledá ji dlouho.
These residents are complaining about the local unemployment rate, an average of 40%. The level for the whole country last month was just over 9%. That's not as bad as in neighbouring Germany or Poland, but it does give cause for concern. The Labour Ministry has now drawn up a plan to find work for more people without actually having to create jobs. The Cabinet launched the pilot project on Wednesday. Dita Asiedu reports.
Citizens of the Czech Republic, give up half of your full-time job to the unemployed and you'll be rewarded. This, in a nutshell, is what the Labour Ministry's plan recommends. People with full-time jobs but low salaries can volunteer to cut their time at work in half and spend the rest of the time helping the non-profit sector or studying, depending on the region that they're in. To make the decision easier, the state will pay 2,210 crowns a month, or around $90, which is half the minimum wage, to every volunteer. The vacated part-time job will then be filled by another person, thereby reducing unemployment, says Labour and Social Affairs Minister Zdeněk Škromach.
We have yet to do some fine-tuning in the area of work conditions and legislation. The pilot project is part of a larger employment policy plan, and we expect to fill dozens or hundreds of jobs with it.
Minister Škromach talks of hundreds of jobs rather than thousands because the pilot project will be launched in only 3 of the country's 14 regions. In the region around the West Bohemian town of Karlovy Vary, the volunteers will have to work the rest of the time in the agriculture sector. The Labour Office of North Bohemia's town of Most will offer a number of study programs to volunteers from the Ústí nad Labem region. And in the Moravia-Silesian region in the far east of the country, volunteers will have to work for non-profit organizations. But economists have been skeptical. They fear the project's impact will be minimal and say that similar proposals in other countries have not proven successful. Štěpán Jurajda is a labor market specialist at Charles University's Center for Economic Research and Graduate Studies.
My sort of first-order reaction is that this is based on a false economic logic, which has been proven wrong many times over. For example, in the last couple of decades in the EU 15 countries, the basic logic that this project is using, which seems intuitively appealing, is actually wrong. You cannot divide the amount of work that is currently used on the labor market among more people by either shortening the work week or by trying to force people into part-time jobs. This is not how the economy operates. Explaining this would really take more than 2 sentences.
Now, the mayors of some towns in those 3 regions have been saying that many people do not have the qualifications they need to actually fill those jobs that would be vacated in this case.
Right. So then maybe the right policy would be to offer retraining courses for those currently unemployed. But, you know, how the district labor offices are identifying, what is the most potentially valuable active labor market, you know, program is a mystery to me. And my suspicion is that there isn't really much of a rigorous evaluation which has been recently used in both the U.S. and EU 15 economies where you really use statistical information and you try to evaluate which of the potential many programs that you can offer has the largest benefit, which can help the most for a given, you know, amount of spending.
The project is aimed at people with low salaries who would then be compensated with 2,210 crowns a month, which is about $90.
Right.
So to me, this doesn't sound enough to persuade anyone.
I agree. What really needs to be worked out is the effective tax rate. I mean, when you're unemployed and you start working, yes, you gain because you have this new labor income, but then you lose in terms of your unemployment benefits and all sorts of social support benefits and so on. And so what really needs to be worked out is how will people who make these choices between part-time and full-time work, how will they benefit or lose in terms of the implicit effective tax rate on their income, and my bet is that that's what's driving 90% of these individual decisions, and this small bonus won't really help that much.
And I was speaking there to labor market specialist Štěpán Jurajda. But the government stresses that it is just a pilot project. Whether or not it will continue or include more regions will be decided after an evaluation by the end of January next year.
Dieter Asieli with that report. Well, all eyes will be on Turin on Friday for the opening ceremony of the Winter Olympic Games. Coinciding with the start of the Games and in a further step towards the digitalisation of television in the Czech Republic, public broadcaster Czech TV is on Friday launching a new channel which will feature nothing but sport. Ian Woodaby has the story.
The sports news begins on ČT24, Czech television's 24-hour digital news channel, which began broadcasting last year. But from Friday, fans will no longer have to make do with occasional sports news. They'll be able to watch a wide variety of sports to their heart's content on the all-new Czech Television 4 Sport. That's if they have a digital receiver or an internet connection. Otakar Cherny is the head of Czech TV's sports department. I asked him why a sports channel and why now.
Jestliže má v České republice digitalizace postoupit, má se prosadit.
If digital TV is going to take off in this country, then Czech TV has the duty to promote it, which we are doing through this sports channel. It's no coincidence that it's beginning now. We chose the start of the Winter Olympics because the timing is good in terms of PR.
Byl vybrán úmyslně proto, abychom právě pomohli digitalizaci v České republice.
As for the Czech sports community, the new channel means they'll get a lot more coverage than has hitherto been the case. Petr Hrubec is the Secretary General of the Czech Olympic Committee.
We are really looking forward to the new sport channel because not only for Winter Olympic Games, but we hope that some small sports like volleyball, basketball or other, they were not really much covered because there were not enough time because, you know, for sport number one is soccer or football here. So we hope that it will help all sport activities that are not so popular, and because there will be 24 hours or 16 hours per day, that they will have also a time on this channel for these smaller sports.
Otakar Cherny of Czech TV says the new station will indeed devote more time to minority sports. But given that few people in this country actually have digital TV, will many fans miss out? And will some big events be shown simultaneously on the terrestrial Czech TV 2, which normally broadcasts sport, and the news station?
Bude rozdíl, nebude dramatický, protože my nemůžeme ošidit diváky.
There will be difference, but it won't be dramatic. We can't short-change viewers who aren't able to pick up a digital signal. But for example, when we show Champions League football games, there will be different matches on each channel, so people will have a choice. It'll be the same with the Czech ice hockey playoffs. Viewers will be able to choose between two games.
Czechs may be interested in sport, but they don't turn out in great numbers to watch events live. Czech league football games in particular suffer from extremely low attendances. Would it be fair to say that Czechs tend to be stay-at-home, armchair fans?
Ano, to je přesně ono. Czech je rád pohodlný, je rád doma a proto má...
Yes, that's it exactly. Czechs like comfort. They like being at home. They like sitting back in front of the TV, which is good for us in television, to be perfectly honest with you. It's the problem of clubs if people don't go to games. It's cold, there are hooligans. If clubs put things right, the fans might go. But if there are no refreshments, no toilets, I'm not surprised people don't go.
Otakar Cherny says apart from the Winter Olympics, the biggest event this year for Czech television for sport will be the Football World Cup. Let's hope fans are jumping out of their armchairs to celebrate Czech success in Germany.
Ian will be there getting us in the mood for the Winter Olympics. Now, it's not unusual in this country to come across weapon caches dating back to the Second World War. But finding a pile of javelins, shields and swords dating back to the 2nd century AD doesn't really happen every day. Jan Bellinger has the details.
According to museum officials in the North Bohemian town of Chomutov, it was a find that almost never happened. A trove of 22 Teutonic weapons dating back 1,800 years that one finder almost failed to report. The finder, a local man, discovered the items on a walk through nearby forests. They lay uncovered in a quiet grove. He gathered the items up and, apparently not realizing their immense value, stored them in his cellar. Only 6 months later did it occur to him to hand in the rust-covered items to officials at the local museum. This week, archaeologist Lenka Ondříčková explained the importance of the find.
Význam toho souboru spočívá v celém tom souboru, nikoli v jednotlivých předmětech.
It is a remarkable find, but not because of individual items, but because of the number of items found. Germanic tribes regularly buried important warriors together with their swords or bits of broken shield, But in this case, what's unusual is the high number of items found at a single site. The number of objects found, and their variety in this case, is what makes this find important.
The only previous and comparable such discovery in Czech lands took place in the 1950s, a case that is still discussed by academics today.
The only similar such find took place in eastern Bohemia, but it was not without controversy. To this day, it has been a matter of debate whether that find was a destroyed burial site or a place for sacrifice. There they found far less, for example, just 4 spears compared to the 11 at Krušné Hory. The latest find could be truly unique.
The Krušné Hory find certainly includes more items. 22 separate pieces, including shield handles, pikes, spears, and an iron sword of typical Teutonic design. But the find could have revealed more. Archaeologists were reportedly upset, understandably, by the fact that the local who made the discovery not only removed the items from the area, but waited so long to report his find. That complicated matters. Viewing the site and seeing the original positioning of the items could have been invaluable, likely revealing more about the items' long-dead owners and the circumstances of their burial than the weapons do on their own. Given the delay, archaeologists were no longer able to decipher, for example, why the items were originally placed in such a shallow grave. On one thing, specialists do agree. Found at high altitude, far from the nearest settlement or the nearest river, this must have been a ritual burial site, a final quiet resting place for Teutonic warriors.
Jan Wellinger there on the importance of quite a significant discovery archaeologically in the Krušné Hory region. Anyway, moving on though, time on Radio Prague, it's time for Panorama. And this week, Ian Willoughby looks at one of the most visited religious icons of Prague. Tucked away inside a church in the Lesser Quarter is a tiny statue of the infant Jesus.
The bells of Prague's Church of Our Lady Victorious on Karmelitska or Carmelite Street. The church is home to one of the most revered images in the Roman Catholic world, the Bambino di Praga or Child of Prague. We'll come to the famous statue in a moment, but first let's find out a little about the Church of Our Lady Victorious and its troubled history.
We are just sitting in front of the main altar. There you can see in the middle the small icon. The small icon was on the chest of a fanatic priest during the Battle of the White Mountain. He asked the Spanish general simply to attack Prague.
Says Dr. Václav Cílek. He's a geologist by profession, but is also an expert on the history of Prague's churches. After the defeat of the Protestants during the Thirty Years' War, the formerly Lutheran church was given to the Roman Catholic Carmelite order. Indeed, the victory in the church's name refers to the part believers say the Virgin Mary played in the 1620 Battle of the White Mountain. Its violent past is still visible today. Dr. Cílek continues.
If you will look around the icon, what you will see the armory, you will see the guns, the shields, you will see the instrument of the war. So just imagine, in our contemporary world, to put in a church, for example, the images of the rockets, of the tanks. I am talking about this church like about the highly problematic, half-dark place in which this figure of little Jesus is shining. The figure of infant Jesus of the Prague has a long history. Very probably, or maybe, it was created in Spain around here 1520 in the times of Teresa of Avila. Through family de Lara, it got into the Prague, and later, just in the middle of the 30-year war, it was donated to this church.
But it wasn't all smooth sailing for the Child of Prague, which at one point was rescued from possible oblivion by a Carmelite priest.
When the wax figure was given to the church, the original people were replaced by the newcomers, and the small figure was thrown away behind the altar and forgotten. And when the Carmelitans have returned, they were in a big trouble. So, you know, the church was half destroyed, they didn't have any money. But then one of the priests, Father Cyril, found the figure and he started to worship it. And it was a situation of the change for the whole monastery.
Devoted Roman Catholics from around the world are drawn to the Czech capital by the Bambino di Praga, which, by the way, is called Pražské Jezulátko in Czech. They believe many graces, blessings, favors, and miraculous healings have been received by those who've petitioned before the infant Jesus. That tradition has a long history, says Dr. Václav Cílek.
It was associated with the miracles, I think, just something like a week or 2 weeks after it came. And since then, but it's quite common in all other destinations, it is a duty of the local priest to keep the book of the miracles. So it means that if a miracle is going to happen, he must make the entry in the book, and usually two witnesses have to sign it up. So through the centuries, they are collecting the miracles and they see the structure of the miracles.
As for the actual figure of the infant Jesus itself, it's around 30 centimeters high and is made of wax.
Maybe there is some mystery hidden in it, because it might be that the central part of the wax may contain some wooden container with something, you know. It was never studied, it's likely to be never studied.
What about the costumes that the infant of Prague wears? How often are they changed? What's the significance of different costumes?
I think this is a part of the Baroque tradition. This infant Jesus of Prague has received altogether approximately 300 different costumes. Some of them are made, let's say, by Maria Theresa, the emperor. Others were sent in 19th century by Chinese Catholic. Others by people from Vietnam. Many costumes came from the noble or aristocratic family all over the Central Europe, but even as far as Sweden and so on. In fact, I'm not sure how often they are changing the clothes. But what is the symbolism behind it, you know? The figure that is old and new still, something is happening. Maybe just the idea that there is a figure which has the clothes is giving a feeling of personality, you know, of something what's alive, you know, what has at least some sort of the needs. But even the figure of the child is a strange one. There is a number of legends in the Middle Ages and even later about the small child of little Jesus traveling somewhere. It has no support in Bible, of course, you know. But just imagine, you know, small child, which is king of the world, is traveling soft and vulnerable in some strange countries. So behind this image is in fact some religion and a lot of the poetics.
The Child of Prague is, as I say, one of the most revered figures in the Roman Catholic world. It's especially well known in some countries, which sometimes have their own particular traditions regarding the infant. In Ireland, for instance, people put a cuppy under a hedge or bury it in the garden as a solicitation for good weather. Before Dr. Václav Cílek and I end our visit to the Church of Our Lady Victorious, he explains how the Child of Prague's popularity spread around the world.
The copies of little Jesus were sent to Philippines, to Brasilia, to Latin America, even to Ireland and elsewhere. So the copies made of china, made of the wood, or simply printed, the etching, copper etching, are distributed all over the world. Several years ago, a head of the Catholic Church in Philippines has come to Prague, and he said that this infant Jesus of Prague helped to unify Philippines that are located on 2,000 or I don't know how many small islands, well, all over in the sea.
Would you say for some people in the world, it's the strongest symbol of Prague?
For Roman Catholics, it might be, together with Charles Bridge, maybe the strongest symbol of Prague, yes.
This week's panorama on the little infant Jesus of Prague was presented by Ian Willoughby. And it brings us to the end of the programme for today. Please do write in if you feel you have anything you'd like to contact us about. The address is Radio Prague 12099, Prague 2, the Czech Republic. And the email, of course, english@radio.cz. From me, Peter Smith, until next time, take care and goodbye.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kHz. 7h, 7h27. Europe, 5930, 7345. 8h30, 8h57, Europe, 9860, 11600. 17h30, 17h57, Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 15710. 19h30, 19h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 9430, 23h, 23h27, Amérique du Nord, 5930, 7345. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz. /français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.